I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Dr. Natasha Turner joins me again. She is one of North America's leading naturopathic doctors. She is an authority on hormonal and digestive concerns. She's written a new book, her third, The Carb Sensitivity Program, Discover Which Carbs Will Curb Your Cravings, Control Your Appetite, and Banish Belly Fat. Her previous books, The Hormone Diet, and the Supercharged Hormone Diet were big bestsellers here in Canada and beyond. This new book is not a diet book, rather it's a carb rehab program that repairs one's metabolism and helps you reintroduce the right carbs to your diet. Not all carbs are created equal. There are those that are bad and those that are good, yet we all react to each carbohydrate differently. There are four phases, which one can do over a period of 6 weeks. We'll get Dr. Turner to walk us through it and offer some tips on how to live and eat better. She is the founder of Clear Medicine, a wellness boutique that provides integrated health care. Carbsensitivity.com is the website for more. The book is published by Random House. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Dr. Natasha Turner. Dr. Turner, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome. So a friend of mine, she'll kill me if I don't mention, she's got a list of questions that she wants to ask, wants me to ask you, because she's a big fan. She's a big fan of the previous two books. Hyperthyroidism, is that something that you looked at in your previous two books?
Hyperthyroidism?
Yeah.
Not as much. I gave mention a little tiny bit, but the hormonal health questionnaires in the first two books, I really was listing more of the symptoms of hypothyroidism because it's so much more common.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, many of the patients that have hyperthyroidism, their treatment that they receive actually makes them go hypothyroid anyway.
Really?
In the end, so...
Yeah. Well, what would you recommend in terms of say, books even, that one could look at for that condition?
For hyperthyroidism, I don't have a book that comes to the top of my mind. I know in clinical practice I've used with good success L-carnitine at higher dosages. Also, there's an herbal combination from Genestra that I've used with good results with hyperthyroid patients. And then again, you have to think about restoring total hormonal balance with these patients, making sure that the stress isn't becoming too much and destroying their muscle mass and their bones and keeping up their good nutrition habits. So I still think you could implement all the philosophies of the supercharged hormone diet or the hormone diet as far as the sleep, the nutrition, and the exercise guidelines. But I would just then maybe consider a couple of those extra supplements I've just mentioned for hyperthyroidism.
Yeah, no, you've mentioned... We've mentioned already the two previous books. How do certain carbs affect one's hormones?
Well, this book is definitely an evolution from the first two books.
Yeah.
And how I came about it is, I've been seeing patients now in Toronto in my clinic here for the last four to five years, putting patients. We have actually about five doctors. We all use the same philosophy, the same approach. Of course, we individualize it to each person, but we've been putting people through the programs laid out in the first two books. And what I started to recognize was in a small section of patients that moved from phase one in those books, which is the detox phase, which helps you get rid of food allergies and inflammation, and then you switch from that into phase two, which is when you start to eat for hormonal balance, and I teach you how to eat, you know, which foods and which combinations to stabilize blood sugars and insulin. Well, I noticed in some of these patients, when they moved over from that phase, the first phase to this phase, they started to maybe not continue to lose weight, or they had more cravings, and some of them actually started to gain more weight. So I started to look at what I was recommending that I was encouraging them to eat every day. So there was a serving of greens and starchy vegetables, a couple of fruits, some beans, unlimited green vegetables, and then your lean proteins and healthy fats. And I thought, well, this is a very carb-conscious diet. How can this be that people are not continuing to get results? Some people aren't. So I started to analyze the carbohydrates more closely that I was recommending. And in the serving of low glycemic carbs, ranging from grains and legumes and starchy vegetables, I realized two things. Number one, that these foods, even though they're all low glycemic and low in carbs and high in fiber, they vary greatly in the amount of carbohydrate that impacted the blood sugar. So, for instance, if I chose to have squash as my starchy carb for the day, I would only be consuming about 4 grams of carbs that would actually impact my blood sugar and therefore lead to the secretion of insulin. And the other thing, and somebody else chose sweet potato, they'd be consuming about 20 grams of carbs. So I thought, wow, I had no idea that they varied so much in the amount of carb. And then the second thing I realized, which I think is probably the biggest thing, is that certain people, even when they would eat the healthy carbs, their body would respond as though it was like ice cream. And what I mean by that is that they were so sensitive to carbs that it would raise their blood sugar and therefore trigger the release of a lot of insulin. And this would cause a lot of symptoms for people. And the biggest thing that I want people to understand is that insulin is the one and only hormone that is always telling your body to store energy as fat. So we never want to have too much insulin. And carbs are the food group which trigger the most insulin release. That's why people tend to lose weight when they go on no-carb diets.
The reaction that we have to carbs is different person to person. What accounts for the differences? I mean, is it body type? What is it? Gender?
What happens? How we respond differently is we all will get a bigger increase in sugar and blood sugar, and we'll get a bigger increase in insulin. And you're right, it is sex. Your sex can impact how well you respond to carbohydrates. Your age, particularly. I mean, we all become more carb sensitive as we age. The more belly fat you have around you right now, the more carb-sensitive you'll be. The more you've yo-yo dieted in the past, the more carb-sensitive you'll be. The more deficient you are in muscle, the more carb-sensitive you'll be. The more under stress you are, the more carb-sensitive you'll be. I have an incredible story of a patient who, she's a VP at one of the large banks in Canada, and her father suddenly died, and she started to gain weight like crazy on the same diet she's always been eating. And it was just the stress of that really impacted her ability to metabolize carbs properly, and she started to gain a lot of belly fat. So we had to alter her carb intake during that time, and I had to, you know, give her more of a metabolic repair prescription to help her body metabolize the carbs better once she put them back in. So, I mean, a lot of things impact carb sensitivity, and it's a pretty powerful thing to be able to figure out what carbs can I eat and not eat so that I don't gain weight, so I don't have cravings, so I don't have an out-of-control appetite, so I don't retain water, so I can lose belly fat. And that's what this program does. It helps you figure out how to get the, you know, which carbs are the best for you, because just like food allergies, it's very, very unique.
Now, you're very effective in your books in that you write not only from anecdotal evidence from patients that you've seen, but from personal experience. What was your own personal experience with carbohydrates?
I have a condition called polycystic ovarian syndrome, and it is completely linked to blood sugar and insulin imbalance. And so patients that have this condition tend to be very sensitive to carbs in the sense that their body, they'll tend to get an over-release of insulin when they eat them. And so, unfortunately, that was the case with me. My first whole thing with hormones started with a thyroid problem in 1993, and then I developed hypothyroidism then, and it was finally diagnosed and treated. And then in 1999, I got diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome. And this condition is usually treated with the birth control pill and diabetes medication called metformin. And so I actually repaired my metabolism using strength training and using the carbs, a very carb-conscious diet at the time. And so I understand how the whole problem of blood sugar and insulin imbalance and carb sensitivity is linked to weight gain and hair loss. And, I mean, I lost tons of hair, menstrual irregularities, infertility. So I certainly have a personal relationship with anybody that has these types of problems, and then also I see it in my clinic every day. I really believe that this one hormonal imbalance, this imbalance of insulin, which is completely related to the types of carbs we're eating and eating the wrong types of carbs for us, is probably the number one health risks that we're going to be facing as we move forward. And in fact, if you look at diabetes or pre-diabetes estimations from Health Canada, it's estimated that 1 in 3 Canadians, and in the United States it's actually 1 in 2 Americans, are going to have diabetes or pre-diabetes by the year 2020.
Wow. Like
this is just massive proportions.
Now, so we buy the book, we go on the program. How do we find out, or what happens in terms of finding out what carb is good for a person?
Well, my thoughts are this. Everybody needs to figure out the best carbs for them. And so when you look at all the low-carb or no-carb diets out there, there's a lot of them. And look at the Atkins diet. More people lost and then gained weight on that diet or any other no-carb diet than any other type of diet. I mean, there's no doubt when you take the carbs out, we lose weight. But the main thing is that nobody can stick to it, right? You fall off track, and when you put the carbs back in, you gain back all the weight you lost plus more. So my first thing that I wanted to think about was, why remove all the carbs if some of them are okay for you? So my first thought of setting up the program was to have the reintroduction process as quickly as possible. Most no-carb or zero-carb diets take out all carbs for 8 to 10 weeks. In the carb sensitivity program, you actually start to phase the carbs back in after 1 week. And what I've done is I've organized the phases so that you put the carbs back in slowly according to how much net carb or impact carbs are in the foods. But I've also set it up in a way that you don't have to measure or calculate anything. Every week I've laid out 7-day meal plan. I've laid it out a permitted food list. And at the end of each phase, if you do the carb sensitivity checklist, which means you've lost 1 to 2 pounds, you feel energized from your food, you don't have water retention, you don't have any cravings, you don't have an excessive appetite, your mood is stable, then you're ready to progress to the next phase, which means during that phase you remain free of carb sensitivity. So the first phase, you get your carbs from green vegetables and low glycemic fruits. And at the end of the week, you go on to phase two, which is introduce the next group of low glycemic carbs, which are the starchy vegetables. And then you progress to phase three, which is the legumes, and phase four, which is the first phase that has some grains added. And then finally, the last phase, which is the highest in net carb or healthy carbs, are the rest of the grains and some potatoes. So you're going to get some carbs back in as quickly as possible. And you continue to introduce the carbs every week if you continue to feel good and you don't have any symptoms of carb sensitivity. So the nice thing is that it's actually not a no-carb diet. I still believe that we should get 35% of our calories from carbs, 35% from protein, and 30% from fat. And what this program does is it helps you figure out what types of carbs should make up my 35%. Should it be starchy vegetables or non-starchy vegetables or fruits or beans or grains? So you don't actually cut the amount that you eat. You're just changing the type, which I think is very important for people to understand because it's certainly not about calorie restriction. It's about picking the right types of foods for your metabolism.
And white bread, white pasta, the sort, is that stuff that you have to cut out, or can that be a carb that one can have in their diet?
You know, here's the thing is that we all kind of know those foods are bad for us,
yeah.
but probably a lot of us don't know that there might be some good carbs that are bad for us. But I do talk about the importance of having a cheat meal once a week. And here's the thing is that if you go through the process of the weekly phase introduction, and let's say you get to phase three and you experience carb sensitivity, so you get weight gain, you get water retention, you bloat up, and you think, okay, wow, I've reached my tolerance for carbs. The other unique aspect of the book, which I'm not aware of any other book on carbohydrates that does this, is I actually have created a metabolic repair program to help you fix the problem of carb sensitivity. So When we take out these carbs from all these other diet plans, we don't do anything to actually fix the problem. And I've actually put together something to help you fix the problem. So in the metabolic repair prescription, the first thing you've got to do is you have to eat in a way that doesn't trigger your insulin. And the only way you can figure that out is by doing the phase-based process every week because you want to stick to the carbs that don't cause you to gain weight. And as part of that metabolic repair diet prescription, you have to cheat once a week. It's proven if you don't, overeat carbs at least once a week, like your white pasta or your nice breads or whatever it is that you want to enjoy, a glass of wine, a dessert, the diet will stop working. It actually helps to boost your thyroid hormone. And it also psychologically is a nice thing too, right? If you know you can go out and enjoy a meal and not have any bad consequences, it's actually good for your metabolism to do that. So those foods aren't off balance. They're not off your plate completely. You don't want to overdo it. So the other part of the metabolic repair is actually a supplement program and a workout that you can do at home, just 3 days a week, 30 minutes. All you need is a ball and some dumbbells. And I had a strength training conditioning expert from Halifax help me put the workout together. So.
And did you put the recipes together yourself?
I did. It was a lot of work. Yeah. We all were cooking a lot here in the clinic, all the doctors, the personal trainers and the nutritionists. We've been all trying out the recipes. And, I mean, it's pretty tough, number one, to get a recipe that tastes good, and then number two, to have them fit my criteria of 35% protein, 35% carb, 30% fat, and still be really good and effective. But there's over 90 recipes in the book, and they're simple. And people seem to really like them. They're along the same proportions of my previous book. So one thing that people do say is that they like my recipes.
And some of the tools that one would need, you mentioned already that you need a ball and some dumbbells for the workout part. For the recipe part, for the cooking, I guess a blender would be something good to have, right?
A blender is a great idea. Maybe I'm a big fan of the Magic Bullet. It's simple. It's easy. I actually opened up the whole recipe section in part four of the book in time-saving tips for the kitchen and told you some things that you'd want to get on hand to help guarantee your success. Like, I really encourage people to get some glass storage containers for foods. I recommend that they make two or three times the recipe if they like so that they can, you know, cook one on maybe one or two days a week instead of having to do something every day.
Mm-hmm.
Little tips like that. I mean, everybody's busy, and convenience is the name of the game, but I want to set it up so in a way that people can get, you know, healthy food, but in a way that's not going to be completely consuming to them. And the biggest thing, I think, is that for people to understand is they don't have to avoid all the carbs, and that some carbs are good for them, and it's very individual, and that you can do something to fix the problem.
You mentioned another part of the program is taking supplements. So what sort of things would one have to take? I mean, it's vitamins, I guess?
Here's the way insulin works is, so people that are carb sensitive, they overproduce insulin. So the secret is to keep your insulin low and steady. And to do that, you have to do two things. One, eat in a way that doesn't trigger a lot of insulin, so stay away from the foods that spike your insulin, which is your particular carb sensitivity. The other thing you can do is help your body respond better to insulin when it does get released. And supplements and exercise are the best way to do this. And the analogy that I really like to give people here when I educate them is that think about somebody that's hard of hearing. When they're hard of hearing, you have to yell for them to get the message. Well, that's kind of what happens when your cells don't respond to insulin. If they don't respond to insulin because they've become insulin resistant, your body has to release a ton of insulin to get the same blood sugar lowering effect. Yet, if someone can hear really well, we only have to whisper for them to get the message, and that's the same as what happens with our cells. We want our cells to get the whisper of insulin's message, so only a bit has to be present. And there are specific supplements that are proven to enhance the sensitivity of our cells to insulin's message, and one of them is fish oils. Fish oils, because of their anti-inflammatory benefits on the cell membranes, they improve insulin receptor sensitivity. Vitamin D3, if you take vitamin D3 at the proper dose for 6 months, it's proven to improve insulin sensitivity and to lower insulin and improve cholesterol balance. Also, I've included zinc. Zinc is essential for your cells to respond properly to insulin. Magnesium, very important for your cells to respond to insulin properly. And in fact, when our insulin levels are high, it depletes magnesium, it depletes potassium in our body, and that's why we end up getting high blood pressure from insulin imbalance. So I actually give you the minerals that become depleted because your insulin is too high. The other vitamin that gets depleted from high insulin is vitamin C. think about all the things that vitamin C does in the body. It protects us from cancer. It helps us adapt to stress. So when I started looking at, oh my goodness, like insulin's depleting my vitamin C on a cell level when it's too high. It's depleting my magnesium, which is involved in over 300 enzymatic reactions in my body, let alone regulating blood pressure and heart regulation. Potassium, I started to realize that on the simplest level, insulin is causing so many different types of disease. So there are certain supplements you've definitely got to put back in, and then there are certain supplements that actually help your body regulate the insulin better. So I think I recommended about 4 products to take. The fish oil, I put together actually a metabolic repair pack, which has all the vitamins and the minerals and the herbs and that your body needs to regulate insulin. And I recommend that you take vitamin D. And then the last supplement I suggest for metabolic repair is something called conjugated linoleic acid. And it's actually one of the few supplements that's been proven. There was an article in the Canadian Journal of Physiology that showed that CLA is proven to maintain muscle mass and to encourage the loss of fat, and it does it because of its regulatory effects on insulin.
Has the success of the books, this book is already a bestseller, the previous 2 books were big bestsellers. Did that surprise you at all?
Totally. You know what? Before my first book was released, I had so much anxiety and fear. I just was so nervous. I thought, I just had no idea how it was going to be received, how it was going to be, what people were going to think, and I didn't have any type of a platform in Canada. You know, I just thought, and I was just so worried. And then I was completely floored when it hit number one right after I did the Canada AM interview. And I was just so thrilled to get, the endorsement from Christiane Northrup, who is, Oprah's women's health expert and has written books. I mean, since I was a student in naturopathic school, I've always been so blown away by all of her work for women's health. And then to get an endorsement from Suzanne Summers for my second book and my first book, and it's on the soft cover of the second book. It's just been an absolutely phenomenal thing. But I guess what's been really the most rewarding is, yes, of course, it's amazing to get that type of recognition from the medical field, but it's the emails and the calls and the posts that we get on Facebook of people saying that they've done the program, that they've implemented it on their own, and that it's really changed their life. So for me, that's just so awesome.
Now, there's also criticism about your books and about your work. I don't know if you saw the piece on the McLean site.
I sure did.
That called this the dumbest diet book.
I sure did.
How do you respond to she called you a pseudoscientist?
But it's so funny because clearly she's not read my books, because the number one complaint that I get from people is that there's actually too much science in my books and they're hard to understand. The difference is the supercharged book. I tried to make it as simple and as streamlined as possible, but I always have so much research and so much science to support all my recommendations, because I feel this is essential. It's I have to do it because of, number one, I'm a naturopathic doctor, so I feel, it's a field where it constantly needs to be more supported by science and research. But when I read that article from the woman on the McLean's blog, mm-hmm. at first my stomach, of course, dropped. But then as I read along, there was one part of the article where I felt like, wow, she's actually made my point for me. And when she listed the symptoms, she said, the writer says that having food cravings, having belly fat, having tiredness after eating, having an excessive appetite. She says these are symptoms of carb sensitivity. She said, I call these symptoms of being human. And my thought on that immediately was, bang on. I thought, you know what? You've just said that these symptoms are normal, that they're normal for almost all adults to experience this. And my point is that it's absolutely not normal. We should never have those symptoms, or very rarely have those symptoms. And there is a reason why we are heading towards the massive epidemic of diabetes that we are. It's because we're eating in a way every day that is causing us to experience those symptoms. And it's taking note of those symptoms and doing something today to make your health better and your blood sugar and your insulin better, that you know, to stop progression towards diabetes. Like, I just think it's, I thought that that was the one point in the article that showed just how prevalent this problem is.
Dr. Turner and Natasha, it's been good to talk again. I'd say best of luck with the book, but it's already a bestseller, I'm sure. Good luck anyway.
Well, thanks, Joseph. I mean, I always take the good luck.
Indeed. The book is called The Carb Sensitivity Program: Discover Which Carbs Will Curb Your Cravings, Control Your Appetite, and Banish Belly Fat. It's published by Random House. Its author, Dr. Natasha Turner, on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plunton.